Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning. You may proceed.
To clarify, we are asking only to prove and recover damages for the 4 years prior to filing our complaint, plus the tacking on or the tolling that is derived from the Federal Trade Commission filing of the complaint. This is a case where the district court ruled that the plaintiff's claims are time-barred because the conspiracy began before the statute of limitations period derived from our filing, and because there was no price elevation during that period of time, within 4 years of our filing the complaint. We respectfully urge, Your Honor, that that particular ruling is erroneous and is inconsistent with Supreme Court rules and with this court's rulings in both Concord Boat and Wholesale Grocery. We could find no circuit court case that has, and other circuits that have taken the position that the district court took in interpreting Clare, or that what the defendants are urging today.
Well, what about the Varner case? You didn't mention it in your summary, and the district court relies on that.
I didn't. And the Varner case, Your Honor, I believe is totally inapplicable to this case.
Tell me why.
It is not a continuing conspiracy case. It is a case where there was a fraud amongst an appraiser, a bank, and a chicken supplier,
right,
to induce this the Varners to purchase a farm and proceed. The only possible violation that was alleged that was an antitrust violation was a contract between one of the defendants and the Varners. And the court said that the performance of a particular under a particular contract is not a new overt act. We have no problem.
What about each time that the buyers there bought equipment and supplies and were forced to enter the tying agreement? Why isn't that just like buying again the product in this case?
Your Honor, first, let me just point out one thing. The Varner case, and it's to me, I can't explain why, doesn't even cite Clare. And they don't cite one.
I thought it did.
No, it doesn't. I was surprised myself. And not only that, every case it cites is a case that predates Clare. I've looked at it very carefully
because
it was surprising. So I just don't think it's not a continuing conspiracy. It's a contract between a plaintiff and a defendant, and the performance of that contract. And that's where they said that anything pursuant to that contract is not a new overt act because it was set in stone at the beginning.
But you just think really it's wrong and it's even inconsistent with Clare.
No, I don't think Clare applies to it because it's not a continuing violation. It's not a price-fixing violation. Clare,
I know it was a tying arrangement, but didn't they have to keep buying the equipment supplies from the one company?
But it was under a contract. Everything was set.
Well, in state court they say everything's a contract. There's implied contract to walk across the street.
You're
with me, counsel. So I don't know that that's a valid distinction.
Well, let's look at the language of Clare and compare it to that, and I think maybe it'll become apparent. And I'd like to read the operative language, if I may. Antitrust law provides that in the case of a continuing violation, and then they actually refer to a case like this, say, a price-fixing conspiracy that brings about a series of unlawfully high-priced sales over a period of time. Each overt act that is part of the violation and that injures the plaintiff, e.g., each sale to the plaintiff, starts the statutory period running again, regardless of the plaintiff's knowledge of the alleged illegality at much earlier times. That's a much different case than Varner. Varner doesn't fall within that at all. Varner is a contract. And in fact, the court eventually ruled that the contract wasn't even an antitrust violation. So I just don't think Varner is applicable in any way, shape, or form. But we do agree that the part of Varner we do agree with is that you need an overt act, a new overt act. And Clare makes it very clear that in a price-fixing conspiracy, a sale is a new overt act.
Does this mean, counsel, the horrible put by the other side, that there's never an end to the statute of limitations? Well, they're going to make sales forever, and You could wait 100 years from now and say, oh, the last sale was yesterday.
No.
The anti-competitive was in 1904, the year the law was passed.
That's a very, yeah, it's an easy argument to make, but it's not a very good argument.
Okay, tell me why, because it's what you're arguing.
Because a plaintiff has, even though the plaintiff has to prove that the price that which he paid was a non-competitive price that resulted in an overcharge. So if he waits 100 years, it's not going to be, that just doesn't make sense. Look, even in Claire.
Oh, I realize you're saying it's not a good claim, but the statute's still alive. You can still bring the claim, right?
But listen, you could bring the claim if you can allege it. If you bought a sale and claimed that it was affected by the conspiracy,
right,
that it was part of that conspiracy.
Right.
But look what happened in Claire. Actually, it's kind of interesting because the plaintiff in Claire made its purchase 20-some years before it bought the complaint, before it filed its complaint. And the court sort of equated a new predicate act in RICO with a new overt act in antitrust. And the court said, it emphasized again sales in respect to RICO. It said, thus the Clares may point to a new predicate act that took place after August 1989, that's within the four-year period, such as sales to other farmers, which meant that and unfortunately, Claire didn't make another sale, but this is 22 years after the complaint was bought. The Supreme Court says if there was a sale to another farmer and it was part of the part of that violation, had he made a purchase, he would have had able to build a claim. There is nothing. There is no case, Your Honor, that we have found that says there has to be an affirmative increase in the price during the limitations period. And in fact, it really doesn't make much sense because it's a distinction without a difference. Suppose you have a conspiracy which is set, well, take this case. It started in 2008, and the price was that was established at that time by the defendants, by each defendant, stays in place, and it gives them a very fine profit, an ill-gained profit that they're satisfied with. And at that price, going into our period of time, they're still obtaining that profit that they're satisfied with, that illegal profit that they're satisfied with, so there's no need to raise the price again. That's number one. The second incident is where, in fact, you get into our limitations period and they find that the price that they're being charged does not give them an adequate illegal profit, so they raise it. Both purchasers in each instance are harmed the same way. And you're saying one can bring a suit and one can't. But let me turn to Concord Boat quickly, because there the court recognized Claire's holding when it compared the defendant's conduct in Concord Boat.
Do you know which one? We have a couple of Concord Boat cases. Do you know which year this one is?
This is the 207 F3D case.
Well,
I think it's 2000.
Yeah, yes.
The 2000 case. And basically, again, I'd like to read this. It's not too long. Where a company is merely holding or using assets in the same manner.
Excuse me, what page are you reading from?
I'm reading from page 1052, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Where a company is merely holding or using assets in the same manner as at the time of the acquisition. And recall, Concord Boat, the defendant acquired two competitors. There is no separate overt act to restart the limitations period, and then it compares the price-fixing conspiracy. As is found, for example, in each new sale by a Sherman Act price-fixing defendant, rather than engaging in another sale or an overt act, this type of defendant simply continues to hold or use assets. To me, that is a clear recognition in Concord Boat that Claire says what we say it says. In wholesale, now let me turn to Wholesale Grocers, because that's the latest. There, it's interesting that in quoting the language from Clare, this court emphasized the words "each sale to a plaintiff." It emphasized it. And I'd like to turn for a minute to what the district court found, because this is key. The district court explained that in Wholesale Boat, there was no increase in price until within the in the limitations period. And then they concluded that because no such price elevation occurred within the limitations period, in our case, the overt act requirement is not met. So what it did was it distinguished Wholesale Grocers from our case, and then it used it against us. The premise of the district court is incorrect in two fronts, both in fact and in law. If you read the district court opinion in Wholesale Grocers at pages 1085 and 1086, the district court refers to the pleadings where the plaintiffs say that they, in 2004, which is before the limitations period in that case, the plaintiffs asked each of the defendants why they were charging such high prices. So it shows that the high prices were actually being charged before the limitations period. Secondly, there is absolutely no record evidence. There is nothing in the pleadings in that case that says that that prices were increased during the limitations period. And recall, this is a 10b-6 case, and to have a statute of limitations issue involved, it has to come from the face of the pleadings. There was nothing in the pleadings that said that there was a price increase in the limitations period. The only thing in that case that took place, in another section of the opinion, there was reference to testimony or evidence by the plaintiff's expert that there were fees that increased. But that was something that was after discovery, was outside the pleadings, and has nothing to do with the motion to dismiss. So as far as the pleadings go, and actually I think on page 8 of our reply brief, Your Honor, we have a citation to the Pacer entry to the complaint in Wholesale Grocers, and you'll see there is no allegation of a price increase. So the judge was absolutely wrong down below when he referred to a price increase within the period of time. And I think when you look at Judge Montgomery's conclusion in the Wholesale Grocers in the district court, she says plaintiffs are not time barred from asserting claims for injuries caused by super competitive prices charged within the limitations period, i.e., in the 4 years immediately preceding the filing dates of the complaints in these four actions. So I think it's pretty clear that there was, and this court actually went along with that and basically said the same thing when it said, under Clare, a monopolist commits an overt act each time he uses unlawfully acquired market power to charge an elevated price. The other part of Clare, in Wholesale Grocers, is this court recognized the holdings in Clare and in Zenith Radio, that where a future sale is unprovable or speculative until it's actually made. The statute does not begin to run until the sale is made. And that certainly is the case here, because when a sale is made in the future, one doesn't know whether it's going to be at what price it's going to be, when it's going to be made, what the volume is going to be, and what the various variables will be that will affect the overcharge. I hope I have some time to reserve for rebuttal.
No, you've used it all. Did you see the red light, a yellow light come on?
Did. I apologize.
Then. Very well.
Good
We'll hear from counsel for the appellees. Mr. Lynch, I guess you're first up.
Yes, Your Honor.
First, I should say.
Good morning, Your Honor. Niall Lynch on behalf of the appellee. The key question for this court is what constitutes an overt act for purposes of establishing a continuing violation, and have the appellants properly alleged an overt act in this complaint. Plaintiffs allege that in 2008, Blue Rhino and AmeriGas reached an agreement to reduce their propane tanks from 17 to 15 pounds. That's the central agreement here. The question before the court is the mere sale of 15-pound tanks. After that point, do those constitute overt acts that with each new sale restart the statute of limitations? So to establish a continuing violation, the law in the Eighth Circuit is clear and requires plausible allegations of an overt act. Every single decision that is referenced by the appellees and appellants make that point, whether it's Varner, Midwestern Machinery, Wholesale Groceries, or and even Clur requires an overt act. Helpfully, the Varner decision in the Eighth Circuit defines what an overt act is in a continuing conspiracy and says, quote, an overt act has two elements. It must be a new and independent act that is not merely a reaffirmation of a previous act, and two, it must inflict new and accumulating injury on the plaintiffs. Using this criteria, the Eighth Circuit in Varner held that the performance of an alleged anti-competitive contract during the limitations period is not sufficient. And that's exactly what we have here.
Doesn't the Clare court and the Clare holding and our quoting it and italicizing in Wholesale Grocery, doesn't that just apply to your case and say there's really no statute of limitations? It's something you did in 1904, they could really bring it against you?
I think the premise of your question shows how that cannot be the answer. It cannot be the answer that...
Now, wait. Congress passes all kinds of laws.
Okay, Your Honor. Well, I'll say that the appellees disagree that that could be the conclusion. Because to read overt act to be merely the sale of a product subject to, or that was resulting from an illegal agreement would, as you say, lead to statute of limitations.
But that's what the Clare case does.
Well, let me address the Clare case.
Each sale to the plaintiff italicized.
Okay. That, I think, I will contend is being taken out of context. The full quote is, antitrust law provides, and this is in Clare, antitrust law provides that in the case of a continuing violation, say, a price-fixing conspiracy that brings about a series of unlawfully high-priced sales over a period of years, each overt act that is part of the violation that and that injures the plaintiff, e.g., each sale of the plaintiff, starts the statutory period running again. I will agree that if you have a series of escalating price increases, that the sales after those escalating...
It doesn't say escalating.
Well, it says a series of unlawfully high-priced sales.
They could be the same.
Well, I wouldn't... I mean, I guess...
It says that, unlawfully high-priced.
Okay,
I can draw a plateau. Go ahead.
Okay, I read it to be, and maybe I'm wrong, but my reading of it is a series of unlawfully high prices is a series of renewed price increases. That's how I read it. Obviously, maybe Your Honor doesn't agree. The other thing I'll say about Clare, let's look at the context of Clare. Clare is a RICO case.
From the Eighth Circuit.
Exactly.
Affirming the Eighth Circuit.
Exactly. Well,
And applying antitrust law.
Exactly.
I think all that's good. Go ahead.
So, in any event, it's a RICO case that was not dealing with what constitutes an overt act or not. It did not define it one way or the other.
Counsel, it says antitrust law provides, and this is the Supreme Court speaking?
I understand that. And they are talking about... they are talking about the analogy to the antitrust laws because they are the common. The Clayton Act defines the four-year statute of limitations. But I will say also that the Clure case dealt primarily with the discussion is in the context of discussing the last predicate rule, not defining what constitutes an overt act. The concern in Clare was that the litigants there wanted to extend the statute of limitations up to 20 years. And the court was saying, no, hold on, that's unreasonable. We need to have it within the 4 years. That's the context. And moreover, the Clure case also discusses the notion of a possible fraudulent concealment, and that's also in Wholesale Groceries.
But they got to wait 20 years to bring it and then just go back four, right?
No, not at all.
I think that's what it says in the Clure opinion.
I think the Clure opinion is not saying that. It's certainly...
Page 184. Go ahead.
I believe it's dicta. I also believe it's ambiguous, and I don't believe necessarily the way that Wholesale Groceries cited it supports the appellant's position. Because again,
okay, explain that. That's a good progression of the argument. Go ahead.
So Wholesale Groceries is an example of an original agreement similar to our 2008 propane case, where there was a market allocation agreement between the defendants. And it was unknown. The parties didn't know about it, the victims. Through the course of this gave them market power. And then within the four-year period of the statute of limitations, they raised prices 30 basis points. And it's that point that really is the overt act that allows the plaintiffs in that case to bring the claim. And that is what is missing in this case. There's no increase of prices or fine-tuning of the conspiracy or any material change of the conspiracy 4 years preceding the filing of the case by these
appellants. It's continued the smaller size cylinder, whatever it's called.
Exactly.
Right.
Let me also put one other issue in context here. I understand a concern about a secret conspiracy hatched that no one knows about, and 10 years later it's discovered, and lo and behold, the defendants could have been acquiring illegal gains. I understand that. But there is a remedy for that. There's the fraudulent concealment concept, which is if the conspiracy is concealed and the victims don't know about it and they could not have diligently found out about it, they can bring claims for back 10 years or 100 years. And many antitrust cases do that. This is not that case. This is more analogous to Midwestern Machinery. This is a case where in 2008, known to the whole world, AmeriGas and Blue Rhino said, we are reducing our propane tanks from 17 to 15. And they went to all their customers. It was widely known. There's no secret about it. 9 months later, plaintiffs saw this and they filed a lawsuit. These very appellants filed a lawsuit. And it was a class action lawsuit on behalf of indirects, and the appellants claim also directs. So they were aware of it. There was a settlement with indirects, and the appellants, the directs, simply abandoned the claims. They didn't pursue them. So they knew about it. Every named plaintiff in the current complaint purchased tanks in 2008 and 2009. So they were all injured at 2008, 2009. They all knew about it at that point, and they abandoned their claims.
But no judgment against them of any kind, right?
No, not at all.
Not even a dismissal without prejudice or a dismissal or...
They simply walked away.
Or an abandonment. I forget what they call them in state court, but go ahead.
They simply walked away. When there was the more narrow settlement on the indirect purchaser claims, they did not pursue it. And you can ask appellant counsel why. I don't know why, but they didn't pursue it. Lo and behold, more than 5 years later, after the FTC files its very narrow complaint, lo and behold, these indirect purchasers come back and want to refile their claims. This is exactly what statute of limitations are for. Parties who are aware of their rights, pursue their rights, abandon them, and sleep on their rights, and then don't bring them back up again until the appropriate point. And that is a very different case than Clerc. It's a very different case than Wholesale Groceries. So the point here, I think, for the court to look at is, has there been anything that occurred after 2008? Because, again, they've abandoned all their other tolling claims. They're not relying on American Pipe or any other tolling complaints other than the filing of the FTC complaint and the continuing conspiracy. So everything focuses on the continuing conspiracy. And after 2008, can they point to any overt acts that restarts the statute of limitations? And our claim is they can't, because it's simply the execution of the original agreement, or as Varner says, execution of a contract, an anti-competitive contract alone, does not establish an overt act that can continue the statute of limitations.
Now, you say this class is the direct or the indirect purchasers?
Direct. Direct.
Well, is it a direct purchaser? You know, when you go in Lowe's or Walmart, you see these things.
Yeah.
You fall over them going in many places. Now, are they the people at Walmart and Lowe's that are buying them?
They are the people who we sell directly to. They are the Lowe's of the world, the Walmarts.
The Walmarts, Lowe's and Walmart.
But it's not Lowe's and Walmarts. It's smaller ones. The indirects are the, like you and me, if we went to Lowe's or Walmart.
And that's been settled.
That has not been settled. That's actually still being litigated before
Judge Fenner. But it's in a
different
case.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, thank you.
Completely separate. And that has its own issues with regard to releases and so forth. So the issue for the court.
When you say that, help me with understanding the record. You say they abandoned this previous litigation.
Mm-hmm.
How did that abandonment evidence itself?
So there was a
exactly happened.
Sure. In June of 2009, the first of many class actions were filed. The first class actions were state consumer claims. By the summer of 2009, they started to allege antitrust claims, too, all based on the 2008 decision to go from 17 pounds to 15 pounds. That case proceeded. There was then some settlement discussions. I was personally not involved in it, but then there was a settlement class that was only indirect purchasers, and that settled, and there was an agreement and a release all before Judge Fenner. The reason I say they abandoned them, we've had previous disputes as to whether or not they were, in fact, members of this earlier class. In the district court, they asserted, yes, we are members of that class in 2009. And the reason they did it is they wanted to take advantage of the American pipe stacking tolling provisions. Because if they were a member of that class, then they could toll under American pipe, and the judge disagreed with them. So they're on record as saying that they were members of the 2009 class. They were just not members of the settlement class. So once the indirect purchasers settled, they didn't pursue the claims. They abandoned them. There was no further litigation on it. They didn't try to, you know, file a new complaint that was just direct purchasers. They didn't try to reach any resolution with the plaintiffs. They simply were absent. And then we didn't hear again from them until more than 5 years later, shortly after the FTC filed its administrative complaint.
So your point is, as far as this matter is concerned, it's as if that, with respect to these appellants, it's as if that class litigation had never happened.
Yeah, exactly. But the point I want to make is that they were fully aware of their claims in 2009. They can't claim that fraudulent concealment. They can't claim that they weren't injured at the time. They knew about the claims. If you look at the consolidated amended complaint in this case, each of the four named plaintiffs will say that they bought tanks in 2008 and 2009. We might have a different case if they were plaintiffs who bought in 2013 or 14. That could be a different issue, but that's not this case. This is a case where people who bought in 2008, 2009, there was a suit in 2009, so they were aware of it. They're obviously alleging that they had an injury, they had knowledge and injury, and then didn't pursue it. That's this case.
This is not a situation, for example, where you've got this class litigation, it's settled. These plaintiffs, these appellants were part of the class, but now they allege that this impropriety has continued despite that settlement.
They are alleged.
Creating new causes of action.
They do allege that the conduct continued, but continued only in that we continued to sell tanks at 15 pounds. And that's why the overt act definition is so important. They're not suggesting that in 2013 or 2014 we got back together and raised prices. The allegations that they make of the conduct between 2008 and 2015 is completely conclusory. It doesn't meet the standards of Twombly and Iqbal. It's merely just that
you're still doing the 15. Yeah, is it 15
yes.
gallons?
Yeah, today we're yeah. still doing
yeah.
15.
Yeah. Okay,
I mean,
go
we've
ahead.
Not changed.
Right. Go ahead.
And so that's why I raised the point, because these are unique plaintiffs. These are not plaintiffs who did not know about it, who could claim fraudulent concealment. This is also not a case where this was a secret agreement. This was one that was made known to the world. Not that we agreed, but that we moved to 15. And it's also one that the plaintiffs knew about in 2009 and filed suit. So this is there's no risk of sort of ill-gotten gains. The risk here is that companies like Blue Rhino and AmeriGas are having to suffer lawsuits by people who rested on their rights for indefinite periods of time and suddenly want to show up and say, oh, well, you're still selling 15-pound tanks 20 years later. We want to bring a lawsuit. And it's that point that we think is not fair. And I've taken all my time, so I apologize.
Very well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Vera? You may proceed.
I just want to talk about the complaint briefly and underscore the points that Mr. Lynch is making about the knowledge. The accrual of the action occurred in 2008. Plaintiffs knew about it. Under Midwest Machinery and standard law, if the defendant acts, the plaintiff is injured, and the plaintiff knows, the statute of limitations expires. It's only when something else happens in the future, new and independent act happens, and that isn't the case here. And indeed, if you look at the complaint, it's even questionable whether this is a continuing price-fixing claim like they say. The paragraph 1 of the complaint basically says that the defendants acted to reduce the amount of propane in the tanks, thereby derivatively raising the price per pound of propane.
Did you leave the price the same? Is that what they're saying?
They're saying that it kept the same. Yep. But they're
that sounds
saying
like a price increase.
A one-time price increase, yes.
Yeah, but they continued.
A one-time price increase. There are no other allegations, or could there be, about collusion going forward 15
years. Do they say
there
was a sale within the 4 years before they filed the complaint?
They say they sold. I mean, they say they purchased during the time that they were injured and they're time barred. What I want to point out is the conclusory and internally inconsistent allegations in this complaint. In particular, I'm not sure exactly what role customer and market allocation seem to have, but these allegations make no sense because in paragraph 90 and 92, they say that the defendants allocated Walmart's business. In paragraphs 54, they say that Walmart allocated its business among multiple suppliers to promote competition and to fend off price increases. In paragraph 53, they say that Walmart threatened to take states. In paragraph 54, they say that Walmart was going to shift business from Blue Rhino to AmeriGas. Completely inconsistent with the
They couldn't have happened at different times?
No, this is 2008.
No, but excuse me, the different allegations could not have happened at different times?
I don't believe that they are said to happen at different times. In other words, they're saying that we allocated markets, but their allegations in the 50 paragraphs are saying as of 2008, this is what Walmart was doing. Walmart was the one to decide who gets the business to play one off against the other. The other allegations of supposed overt acts are equally conclusory, including things like Ken Janish had discussions with AmeriGas. He's in my company, and he did have discussions about AmeriGas, about what Blue Rhino was going to do, and maybe what a Blue Rhino person told him was going to happen back in 2008. All the detailed allegations in this complaint are about what happened in 2008. There are no detailed allegations, if any, other than, you know, they continued to do what they did, and that doesn't meet the Twombly test. So even if on that level, Your Honor, the complaint's deficient and should be affirmed. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. You may. I was going to say we'll give you 2 minutes.
There's really a misstatement here, and I know it's not intentional, but there was in 2008 there was no direct purchaser who brought suit. There was no direct purchaser that ever walked away from a suit in 2008, 9, 10, or 11. What happened was there were indirect purchasers that originally brought a suit and alleged a class that included direct purchasers. And when they got a chance to settle and they realized they couldn't settle on behalf of direct purchasers, they dropped that section, that allegation from their class definition. But there never was a direct purchaser plaintiff that appeared in court until these cases were filed. That's number one. Number two, I want to recall the last language in the Clare opinion, in the Clare language, where it says, after it says each sale to the plaintiff starts the period running again, regardless of the plaintiff's knowledge of the alleged illegality at much earlier times. So it may be a very nice prejudicial argument that they're making, but it really is irrelevant. The last point I want to make very quickly is with respect to Walmart, and the allegations that he read, that's the reason why they had the conspiracy.
Yeah, but counsel, are you saying those all happened at the same time or at different times? No, so it's different paragraphs.
No, I'm saying it happened. It was part of the circumstances that led to the conspiracy.
I understand what he tried to say. He tried to say in one place you've got Walmart allocating, and the other place you've got those two over there allocating, and that can't be true.
No, I don't believe they were all simultaneous. That's what you mean.
Yeah.
I think there was a dynamic going on in the industry at that time, which is why this conspiracy came about. Because they wanted to raise the price, they couldn't raise the price, so they came up with this scheme to lower the tank, the amount of poundage, and keep the price the same. Thank you very much, Your Honors. Appreciate it.
All the cases submitted, and we will take it under consideration.